Hurricane Lisa, the Bay Area Large Installation System Administrators Group meets on the third Thursday of every month, which means that it's 2 days from now at Insight Genomics, which is in Palo Alto, on Porter Drive. You can take a look at www.baylisa.org. Augusta Ada, the Star Trek Linux FreeBSD gathering. Hey, we're doing pretty good here. We have a great LCARS interface on my Enlightenment box. is meeting on the fourth Saturday of every month. Check out our website, trek.starshine.org, for a link to the meeting of for the meeting location of the month, which is at one of our members' homes in Alameda. And if you are a sysadminly type who is interested in going to a picnic, Bay Lisa is having a picnic this Sunday at Oak Meadow Park in Los Gatos.
Thank you. Next.
Oh, and there will be a Linux install fest, Linux and FreeBSD install fest at the picnic.
Okay, Linux and FreeBSD install fest at the picnic. There we go.
This is my first Baylog meeting. I'm actually out from Nylug. I just moved out in July, so I missed one, but I'm hoping not to be a stranger. I am here both to enjoy Baylog, but also I have a mission. I am with the company Left Flyers out there by the door. If you know anybody who is of a journalistic inclination and who is skilled with open source, or at least has a clue about open source, please send them our way. We rather need a managing editor to run our content and our publications, and I could use a good boss. So if I like you, it's a really good thing. Also, if you know any Java studs, that's another thing which is very much in demand in this company. We are in San Francisco and hoping to get huge. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Marjan Mercado. I'm Director of Engineering Operations at Turbo Linux in Brisbane. If any of you who might be interested in a position in Brisbane, please come by.
And finally, I'll keep mine as short as Marjo. My name's Jim Meyer. I'm nobody important at a company called WildBrain. We have a .com, we have technology jobs, etc. If you're interested in working even tangentially in the entertainment field, making pretty pictures and animations, come drop by and shake my hand.
Okay, one more time. Any further announcements? Okay, well, again, welcome to Baylog. We meet on the third Tuesday of every month. This month we're a little short, only got about 45 people or thereabouts, but that's okay. It's kind of a hot, weird summer. It's kind of strange. But we will start the show momentarily, and we have some interesting information on some new hardware. And I will leave that to John when he is ready. I guess he's ready.
I wasn't expecting the clap. Well, it's great to be at Baylog. I haven't actually been to a Baylog yet, and it's just cool to see a lot of faces that I haven't seen before. What I'm going to go through is really the overview of Indrema and what we're looking to do to the game industry, and we're using very cool things, including Linux technology. Really, what this is an attempt to redefine the video console industry by opening up the architecture and giving it away to the developers so that they'll really have a powerful platform to leverage and to be included in the architecture development. what we really hope to accomplish within the next year or two is to amass sort of a swelling interest and support in our platform and a tremendous amount of development and activity on the architecture, so that ultimately what we will have is sort of a core gamer interest and a real stable base of people who really believe in the platform, really believe in the open architecture and the principles of it, and the new philosophy of designing for an open system, and then get that to eventually spill over into the mass market, which obviously, you know, our plans for marketing to a larger audience are there. However, we're really focused in the beginning at just the core gamer and those that want to develop open architecture. So let me give you a little bit of background on what we are really intending to do. What is the purpose of Indrima? Why did we start the company? We started it in March of 99, but it's really been something I've been trying to get off the ground for the last 5 years, and now it's exciting to see it come together. We are providing the ultimate game platform. This is something that is a hardware architecture that you can buy. It's going to be, you know, around $299, and you can get it off the shelf or buy it online. And it is going to have hardware inside of it that will allow you to play games at performance that eclipses PlayStation 2 and functionality that goes way beyond what Xbox is trying to accomplish. So it's an exciting platform from a hardware perspective, even if you're not developing games for it. Also, what we're providing is the very first principle in open source for consumer electronics. So it's really a platform that takes the takes the concept of open source and it blows it out to and the nth degree. And it says, okay, now we need an architecture that's based on open source that doesn't just touch people on the desktop or in the server arena, but it actually gets out into the consumer markets and it starts touching those boxes that are in the stores, that are in the Walmarts and the Best Buys, and that technology will benefit that market segment as well. That's not an easy task to accomplish, and it really requires sort of a melding of two worlds, where you got a tremendous amount of activity in the open source community, but you want to make sure that it will deliver product and that it will consistently deliver product over time. And lastly, the integration of several different technologies, not just gaming. The box will obviously do gaming amazingly, but it's going to also allow you to engage a personal TV system, hold all of your MP3s and manage them in a library. It's going to allow you to download movies eventually. A lot of the content offerings that will not be activated at launch, you will see become activated later on in the life of the box. So 1 to 1.5 years after launch, you'll start to see a lot of content that you can download and movies that you can rent and games that you can buy. And it's going to be really cool when it comes to just availability of content through this system. And the entire architecture running under the hood is open, so that it's exciting that it's now going to have a venue that is so attractive to the consumer. For those of you that aren't gamers and that don't do market research, just a little background. The video game business is now bigger than the motion picture business. Yeah, we love that. You know, it's roughly $7.4 billion as of last year, which was a larger than 20% growth. And MPAA box office revenue is less than that. So, and it's growing faster. So it's becoming the most exciting sort of area of focus for new artists today, and one that we hope to have even more artists get in. We want to grow the market even bigger than it is today because we're really making an opportunity for independent developers to finally get to the consumer space, where before they could really only launch their product by releasing it as shareware or freeware on the PC. We want to change that. So now they have an immediate opportunity to get to the consumer on thousands or millions of boxes overnight by pushing it through our certification program and getting it out there quickly and not paying any money to do that, which is very important. Now, what are the problems that we're seeing in the console today that Indrima looks to solve? Well, the console has been a great source of fun for a lot of people. There's 45 million boxes out there today, but there are a lot of problems with it, and because of that, we think it hasn't really grown to its full potential. There's a lot more that it could do, and it could become a much more compelling platform if you solve those problems. One of the problems is that the limited performance of the box, it makes it so that you're coding a game, you really have to code to the registers of the GPU. And coding to the registers of the GPU is not, a trivial task. It's not one that takes weeks. It's one that takes months to years to get a game engine that is tuned to a specific hardware architecture in a console. Once you've got that engine built, you can write games on top of it, but making that game engine run on the new box is time-consuming. So we've optimized the performance on our platform because you can take the open-source engine and you can use those components to build your games on top of. You don't have to build your own engine. Now, that doesn't preclude Electronic Arts or other companies from being able to take their engine, their proprietary engine, and still run it on our platform, and it will run fast. But a new independent game company can leverage what is already there in open source to get a product out faster and will still be very performant. The next thing is that games are pretty expensive. Who here plays games? Who here plays console games also, not just PC games? There's a lot of pushback that games are getting very expensive, and that a lot of the big budget games are you're seeing like $40, $45, almost $50 on price tags on some of the games. And that's like half the price of the box these days. And it's kind of scary. And what we want to see is we want to see that pushed down. We want to actually widen the spectrum of price so that independent game companies, when they get to market, they will have the advantage of undercutting the big guys because, you know, they have nothing to lose. They want to get their title out there. They can even get it out there for free and try and make a name for themselves. Whereas today, they'd have to cut a deal with Nintendo or Sony, and that's pretty much a very difficult thing to do if you have any chance at all. A lot of them sell out to, you know, the big houses if they want to get pushed out on a console, and that in itself is difficult as well. The five-year cycle, you know, everyone's waiting 5 years for new boxes. That's getting a little smaller today in terms of the timeline, but really it takes an extensive amount of time for a new box to come to market and to enjoy new performance, and we don't want that. So we built a platform that isn't limited by that. The actual GPU in the box is modular. There's a button in the back of the console that you push, and it actually ejects a proprietary GPU card format that's in our box. Now, so the hardware has this GPU card format that's only on our hardware, but what it allows it to do is you can remove the GPU card, pop in a next-generation GPU processor, and then it won't need another driver. It won't need to load anything. It'll just work, and it'll work at higher performance. So we figured out the issues with doing that, and you know, it's something that requires a lot of you know, sort of regulation as to how that GPU form factor, that card, works, and making sure that the game companies or the vendors of those cards are doing it right. Next, obviously, the big one is game boxes are closed. They are so closed, they don't even have standardized APIs on most of them. So if you're writing something, say, to PlayStation 2 today, you really can't even write it to OpenGL, because if you try and write to OpenGL, it doesn't really have a full implementation of OpenGL. There are certain libraries that are written, so if you write to OpenGL, it translates it into like native code, but it's not real OpenGL. They don't really have a full OpenGL implementation. So you don't have the benefit of a standardized platform to write to that leverages different generations of hardware. And that's because, well, our feeling is that the reason why that has happened is because traditionally the manufacturers of these consoles have not been very software-centric. They've been hardware-centric. So they basically come out with a box that has a new chip in it, and they say, okay, write whatever you want to write that runs on it. And then you have to figure out how the chip works, and you have to write your code to the chip. You don't write it to a software layer in between. You can achieve better performance with faster hardware and still use the software layer in between if you do it right. And opening it up obviously ensures that it'll be lean. What's our business model? I guess you guys are curious, you know, hey, you're giving up the architecture. Well, you know, how is it going to work then? Is there going to be any advantage to game companies to be able to produce software for your platform? And there's any advantage to you to evangelize the platform and to market it? Well, there is, because when you give up the open source architecture and you say, okay, all the pieces inside are public domain and everyone can work on it with us, you have to then provide a program for the games to be able to be certified so that you can ensure to the consumer that they're going to run properly. So if a game is going to be written to run on our box, we certify that. Now, we can certify it for free. There's a freeware and a standard certification program. Freeware means you're not going to sell it for profit, so we don't charge you a royalty on the game. So really the business model ends up being one of we become a certification enabler in the middle, and we ensure that all the hardware runs all the games and that all the games that are made and all the software made for our platform will run on all the boxes made. Well, we have a license that's with each of our manufacturers. And so when somebody develops an application that runs on any of those boxes, there's a DB Linux distribution that's totally open. So you write it to DB Linux. If you want it to run on our box, then you want to get certification. So really it becomes a model of distribution where you own the architecture. Somebody else could make a DB Linux box and create their own certification program, but they wouldn't have any of the marketing power and they wouldn't have the great boxes at the low price out there. So we're providing a tremendous distribution by making this ubiquitous box that leverages the DB Linux architecture. But DB Linux is in and of itself isn't owned by us, and it's basically a standard of APIs and a standard set of tools that you can use to develop. Well, we maintain the standard initially, but we don't have to. You know, it's because it's by, you know, absentee, you know, issue that, you know, we're maintaining the standard because we're promoting the standard. Obviously, if anyone has heard about the news of our relationship with Red Hat, that alliance was established to promote the DB Linux standard for a console game platform. So basically, you know, we're coming out with a universal standard, and we're getting other companies behind us to support this universal standard so that we will get their support as well, and that there will be no fragmentation on this effort because it includes the efforts of people working on all the different APIs. Okay. So moving ahead, a little bit about us. We're located, we just moved to Alameda, California, that island in the East Bay, and we moved from New York City, so it's quite an adjustment. In fact, all the employees hopefully will be moved out by the end of the year. And we're real happy to be out here finally. And the interesting thing is that our location in Alameda is being infiltrated by like major production houses and special effects firms. They took the Air Force or the Navy base and they converted it into a bunch of sound studios, all those hangars have been converted into sound stages. So they shot like The Matrix there. They shot What Dreams May Come. All that stuff was shot. All the special effects were shot in those sound stages. So it's pretty cool because we got a lot of movies being filmed, a lot of artist activity being done around us, which is what we wanted. Perfect place for us. But we're very consumer-focused. In other words, on the hardware side and in the marketing side, we're really targeting a consumer-based market. It's not really a PC-centric market, and all of our energy is focused at getting manufacturers that are in the consumer space, not the PC manufacturers, but the actual consumer electronics manufacturers, driving down the price. We're providing a hardware and software solution and standards for it. We're certifying the content so that it will run on our platform seamlessly without installation. And we're innovating open source technologies to fill in the gaps. The advantage to open source, I'm sure you guys know what they are, but just in case, it really changes the rules of how this architecture will work because we're taking the APIs and we're giving them up and we're saying, okay, unlike DirectX, we're not going to dictate how it will evolve, and we're not going to break games that run on old versions. You guys are actually going to be developing on these open source architecture, on these open source APIs with us. We're going to have engineers on the open source projects, and other companies can have engineers on the open source projects. And together we'll make sure that for the benefit of all of us, that it will move forward faster than any other platform for gaming. It lowers the cost of development because they have tools that they can get started right away and put games out, just like I mentioned before. Speeding time to market is a big issue. A lot of the game houses, you know, they one of their big deterrents to committing to a new game platform is what's the risk involved? You know, we're spending a certain amount of resources to put a game on your new platform. We want to make sure that it's not going to be incredibly costly for us to take this chance. And when they see that we've opened up the architecture, we're seeing a tremendous amount of commitment and interest because they're actually committing to something now that they don't have to worry about targeting multiple platforms and doing everything, you know, twice and having to pay two different buckets, you know, of money to two different companies each time. Now they can code to one universal architecture, and you know, if they don't want to, they don't even have to pay for it because they can release it as freeware. So it's tremendous flexibility. It's zero barrier to entry, and getting into the architecture kind of lays that out. At the very highest level, you've got the application layer, where you've got the games running, the digital music library, the personal video recorder, the sort of you know, personal TV system, and the web browser is actually open. It's on that proprietary layer there, just because it would be too complicated to section it out. But actually, the browser is based on the Gecko engine. It's not using the Mozilla code base entirely. It's actually just using the rendering engine for HTML, and then it's embedding that in the software interface of the machine. So it's an edge-to-edge web browser on your TV, and it has a lot of really cool floating controls on top of it. The Extrema user interface lays on right underneath that, but on top of the open APIs. All Extrema does is it makes sure that a game is certified before it allows it to run on our box. It looks like X, basically, to most, you know, developers. So it doesn't. There's really no learning curve to Extrema, but it is highly optimized. So there's no X overhead when you're playing games. It's extremely fast. And then the entire SDK environment and all the APIs are open. We support Mesa 3D architecture, the implementation as an implementation of OpenGL. OpenStream, which is a technology that we've pioneered and we will be releasing the source code implementation of that and the API set once it's complete. OpenAL, which some of you may be familiar with, has been used in games already. By Loki and has been initially developed by Creative Labs and Loki, and we're now looking to extend that architecture to support a more robust gaming platform. DV Linux sits underneath it. It's the kernel. It's all the pieces. It's some of the driver implementations on our platform. All that's open. And then sitting underneath it, you've got our embedded 86 hardware standard and a lot of the MPEG-2 and HDTV and DVD decoding capability. That stuff is not open. If we tried to open DVD, we could never get this thing out, and we would never be able to license it, and you wouldn't be able to enjoy very inexpensive hardware. So we are taking the DVD decoding system, and we're putting it in the layer that's down below the hardware, within the hardware. So there's an API call that lets you play and control the DVD system, but you can't actually have access to the decrypted stream of DVD through the API. If we did that, we'd never get the license to be able to use DVD. So one thing that's very important, we support open source 100%. We also support the ability to secure your intellectual property if you want to. You have to have a platform that allows you to open it up as far as you want to, but it also allows you to hold on to what's yours. If you don't want to open up your own intellectual property, if, for example, the games... If you make a game that is your own content, your own idea, if you're forced to open it up, then it restricts your ability to not only generate revenue, but your sort of ability to pay for your own efforts by creating these things. So we allow you to make games that are closed, but the architecture has to be open. And you have to have the ability to choose whether you want to keep your technology in the sort of proprietary realm of your code or move it outside and have it be part of the open architecture. That's your choice. All the game developers have that choice when they're creating new technology, whether they want to put it open or keep it in-house. And that's what allows them the ability to enjoy revenue from it. Otherwise, it's a real scary prospect for the big game houses if you don't allow them that. Moving forward, the developer momentum here, the main idea is for developers is very, very clear. There are no barriers to entry on our platform. If you want to make a game for Indrema, it costs you no money to make it, to get the SDK, to be able to license, because there is no license, you can get all the tools, you can get access to the architecture for free, and you can even distribute it for free, and you can get it posted on what's called our game channel. So there's an interface on the box that allows you to push a button on the controller and go to the game channel. And with the game channel, you can download free games and you can buy other games. So the games are distributed in DVD format for physical distribution or for download pack for online distribution. And online distribution basically means getting it on the game channel. But that's a nice way of getting that freeware out there for free and providing a distribution path for those developers at no cost. As they own the architecture, really they become responsible for most of the momentum down the road, and that's what's exciting about this is that, you know, Microsoft has to put all their money into DirectX and Sony has to put all their money into their architecture, but what we're really doing is we're going to grow the platform not just on our own efforts and on our own engineering ability, but everyone's. And because they can get involved in the development projects to improve the APIs. And we're leveraging independent artists by giving them the opportunity to move forward on a level playing field. That's so important. We feel it's so important to growing the market. Our SDK is called the IE SDK, the Andrema Entertainment Software Development Kit. That has all the open source APIs, DV Linux, all that stuff. We're going to be making an announcement later on towards the end of this month or early next month about some exciting things that are going to be given away for free with the SDK, tools and things like that, which we hope to be announcing within the next month. And it'll give you an idea of just how committed we are to making sure that developers on our platform have everything they need to get started. As well, you know, we're really licensing our technology. So the hardware platform, we're not just going to be manufacturing our own boxes. We're allowing companies like Matsushita, Philips, and Samsung, and other manufacturers to be able to license our technology and build boxes as well. That really makes it pervasive and drives down the price of the box. We feel that's important as well. Looking at the specs, just sort of a one-to-one, Andrema versus Xbox versus PS2, here you've got the GPU on, you know, the GPU on the PlayStation 2 is running at 150 megahertz. It's the Motion Engine, which is, you guys can't even see that. Holy shit. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, it's 733 for Xbox. It's been updated. We've got a kind of surprise for them by the time we launch, but we're not. I can't get into it. So 600 megahertz for our CPU as it stands. There is, if you look at the GPU, which is really the core graphics piece, the Emotion Engine is running at 150. It's a custom chip designed by Toshiba and Sony. It's a great chip, but when you look at the throughput and the bandwidth on it, it just doesn't compare to what's possible these days. I think it's going to fall behind the curve very quickly. The processor that's in the Xbox and the processor that's in Andrema are both made by NVIDIA, and they're both going to just kick serious butt next year. They're just totally on a different plane of performance from what you're seeing today. Even if you look at the amount of transistors that they're putting in the next generation processor in our box, well, we don't have that here, but it's like almost double. It's a very powerful chip that just goes way beyond what you're seeing, even though what you're seeing today is pretty good. Now, the total memory in our box is segmented. It's not unified memory. On the Xbox it is, and on PlayStation it is. The segmented memory is actually works in two tiers, so it actually pulls data from the local memory at 32 megs, but then it caches ahead using the 64 megs, so it looks like somewhere closer to 96 megs to the GPU because it's caching ahead, and the 32 really is as fast as you would see if it was more like 96. The bandwidth on it is going to be between 5 and 10 gigs. It's a huge range, but 5 and 10 gigs just gives you an idea that this is really beyond what you're seeing today. And then PlayStation's like 3 and Xbox is double that, so we're really going to be pretty fast. Polygon performance is there. It's 120 to 180 million per second, and Xbox is 150 and PlayStation is 66. We've got DVD, we've got a hard drive, PlayStation doesn't. Xbox has both. We've got broadband enabled. PlayStation requires an upgrade. Our DVD movie playback is built in. PlayStation requires a utility on their memory card. We have personal TV available on our system. They don't. We have an MP3 jukebox system and a music management system built in, and they don't. So, if Ethernet port, yeah, most of them are all Ethernet port. They don't have like DSL built into it because that's a standard that's so widely differentiated in different implementations. So, yeah, it is DHCP based, but you can actually go into the setup menu and you can hard code an IP if you need to, but it defaults to DHCP. So when you plug it in, it tries to discover. Okay, well, as I mentioned, the chip is a future generation NVIDIA technology that's not going to come out till next year. Today's processors are based on the NB20 set. You can kind of guess what the next generation is if you keep up on this stuff. And it's really amazing. I don't know if you can see in that picture, but the level of detail even shows you the wrinkles in his forehead. You know, it's not just photorealistic. It goes to another level of depth. When you come up close to objects, you'll see higher levels of detail. The gameplay is going beyond photorealism, where we're trying to achieve something that we call cinematic gameplay, where we're trying to represent the human perception. So, like when you play Quake 3 and you're playing it at 60 frames a second, you pan your head left and right, and it's almost disorienting because you're seeing plenty of frames going back and forward, but it's so crystal clear, you're not used to doing that. If you just move your head back and forth real quick, you see blur, and you expect to see blur. That's actually more comfortable than seeing perfectly clear frames back and forth or perfectly clear motion, because your eyes only process in a certain way. So what we're trying to do is build in error or build in certain features into the system that are flaws intentionally to represent the human experience. Things like motion blur, full-scale anti-aliasing, because the edges should be smooth, they shouldn't be jaggy, because nothing is that sharp. All of that stuff is part of the cinematic gameplay, and it's really full frame weight, full featured. Nothing drops. The quality of the gameplay is completely 100% there. Moving forward out of games, you know, just sort of summarize on the content that you're going to see. Well, the game channel obviously gets you access to free games online that you can load. It also lets you buy games. The Free Play Network will let you connect with other people online and play, kind of like SegaNet, but it's based on an open architecture on the server side, so you can plug in like a SegaNet module and it could talk to SegaNet as well, so you could play people that are on SegaNet. Andrema TV is a personal TV system that not just pulls off of what's playing on your TV, but also can pull near DVD quality content that we set up on servers on the internet. So really, you could pick, like for example, your favorite episode of, you know, news radio, or say you don't like all the news radios that have John Lovitz. You only like the ones with Phil Hartman. You can actually type in news radio and then Phil Hartman, and it will actually go out to the internet and pull from the NBC content site or, you know, the syndicated content site the actual episodes that you want. So it widens the opportunity for content for personal TV, which is really cool. The Andrema Music Channel is a place where you can buy music per song at 99 cents and load it onto the system and add it to your library of music, which can include MP3s as well. And the Internet Portal really is just sort of a site where, you know, just sort of where the web page goes to by default, which you can set to whatever you want. The manufacturing of this, I hope I'm not getting a little bit too far on the business model. I know some of the stuff is a little boring, but the purpose of this overview is really just to give you guys a sense of how this entirely new model fits together. It's something that we feel very passionate about, that people should understand the new dynamics of this new market that's being built on open source and how we're leveraging it for gaming. But in the manufacturing side, you know, we're providing a turnkey solution for these manufacturers so we can get enough boxes out there on the market by different vendors so that the price will be driven down and you can get an open source game box and you can get plenty of games running on Linux that are on a platform that is going to be very, very inexpensive to get, and that you can get plenty of games that are sort of available everywhere. And you can even become your own developer. You know, anyone can really become a developer, and that's exciting. So the Red Hat and Andrema Alliance is really ensuring that the manufacturers have all the support they need to leverage the DB Linux standard to build a box. And that's a very powerful statement for them, because they really haven't had that level of support. Yeah. Are we going to... I'm sorry? You could take DB Linux, you could take the ISDK and load it onto a PC. That's the idea, actually. Because your development environment is the PC. It's not the game box. Now, I'm sorry, go ahead. Right. Right. Well, the way it works is if you want to make a game, you could run it on Linux, or you could run it on any distro of Linux, or you could run it on DB Linux on the PC. You're not going to get the hardware. I mean, it's whatever your hardware is. So DB Linux won't run that much better on a PC. The only thing you get is maybe some of the X optimizations and that, but you're not going to get the ability to play back DVDs. You're not going to get the ability to, have access to the library of IES certified games, because certified games run on our box. But that doesn't stop anyone from releasing a copy of that game targeted at Linux desktop and at our box. That's totally cool. The thing is, it only runs on our box if it's certified. So you have to release a certified version of it to run on our box. Well, they don't have to take, if they don't want to take it freeware, they don't have to take it to us. I mean, that it's an option. We're giving them an ability to get to millions of people overnight on the console. So they could just say, forget it, we'll just... If it's not certified, it will not run on our box. Yeah, but you could go the free certification route. Right. Well, if you make a profit of $200 a year, then you sold, 10 copies? Then it's not going to cost you a lot. Yes. That's exactly right. It's a digital signature on the binary. If it doesn't see the digital signature, it won't execute. So it's pretty simple. Uh-huh. Hacking's going to happen. That's our attitude. Is that, what are we going to do to stop it? All we can do is monitor, what's the activity out there, and if we see a really great hacker, we want to hire him. And if we probably won't be able to, but... we like the fact that it's going to get hacked because, first of all, it's based on public key cryptography. So even if they hack it, they still got to, either force attack the key or find the key or, somehow go around the encryption system. And that's not a trivial task. Even force attacking is not that easy. And the system is set up so that if you find the key, it'll only do you good for a certain amount of time. So because the keys are not totally static. So, basically, it's not an easy system to hack, but people will hack, and we acknowledge that, and there's nothing that we're going to do to stop hackers from doing what they do. Well, I think what happens is if somebody tries to, hack the DVD system, and tries to open it up, and then it jeopardizes, a huge piece of our ability to satisfy licenses, then we have to protect our relationship with those licensors. And so we're going to have to say, okay, you hacked the DVD, then we're going to have to issue, a patch, or we're going to have to find some way to fill that hack to reinstate the DVD protection. That's the kind of a thing that we... But that's our problem, That it's because our business model is based on making it available to everybody and licensing DVD the right way. There's nothing we can do about that problem, yeah. Well, we'd love to, but it's hard enough to sell a new game box. Yeah. The hardware architecture? No, the hardware architecture is not. The software architecture is what's available. They won't be doing driver. They won't need to do driver development. Yeah. The API is, but the driver interface is not. Yes. No, please. great question. I think that on the driver level, there's going to be limited access because the driver level is not the open source layer. So all the SDK stuff, like the API implementations, which have the API on the top has an application interface, and then on the bottom it hooks into the driver interface. So our implementation will hook into our driver interface, and we will have certain pieces of our drivers that we will open where we can. But we can't open some of the drivers just because if we open some of the video driver stuff, well then, how do we protect DVD decoding and ensure that people can't have programmatic access to the decrypted stream of video? We can't. So some of the part, there'll be static files and binary files that are completely closed that are part of that library, and then there's going to be open parts that wrap on top of it of that library where, of course, people can work on. Now, if somebody wants to work on the closed part of that driver, then we want people to get involved. It's not necessarily by our choice that we're closing some of that driver stuff. It's because we're allowing DVD playback in a commercial product. Go ahead. I'm sorry, say that again. It's the is a processing. I can't hear. I'm sorry. Can be intercepted. Yeah. It'll have Macrovision coding in it, but other than that, it's all yours. the thing is, we have to protect intellectual property just as much as we protect the right for people to work on code. So if somebody makes a piece of code that they don't want to open, well, they have the right to do that too. Unfortunately, this company called, or this system called CSS is not in the open source domain, and the reason is because all the people who make the content are not willing to give it away, and so they will only buy into that kind of a model. If we want to be able to play that content, we've got to play by that rule only for that thing. There's nothing stopping somebody from trying to come up with a player that will, be certified and can load onto our system that will play some sort of a special MPEG-4 format that, you could then master discs and stuff on that. You can go ahead and do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But for DVD, for official DVD playback, which is something we want to make available to you guys, we've got to also additionally add that support. So there's nothing stopping people from being inventive and adding another feature. Go ahead. Yeah, probably. Yeah. If it certifies, it's not a problem. We don't have a political agenda on certification. It's a technical qualifier. Certification ensures that it runs properly on the box and it doesn't bypass any of the security systems of the box. What do you mean with their box? Is it a box that's been in, is it an Andrema branded box, or is it, okay, so it's an Andrema box. Yeah. If they found a way to do it, then that's great for them. But if it's something that jeopardizes some of the licenses that we have to support, then it becomes an issue that we have to protect. But something like putting up a web server, that's probably pretty doable, and that's great. But there's so much more that you're paying for in that box in terms of graphics capability. Right. Oh, I know. I'm sure that people will do a lot of other things that we can't even think of. I don't want to think of, but what's that? Go ahead. Yeah. Yes, they can. Yes, they can. You can buy a dev box. It's a little bit more money. And a dev box actually has a certificate for you. So what happens is you can compile as a normal product for certification, and then if it gets stamped for certification, it will run on all the boxes. Or you can compile and stamp it yourself with your certification. So you can have developer-specific certification that runs only on your developer box. So then that's what you get when you get a dev box. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's something we have to figure out. Well, if it's an open source project, there's no problem with the licensing, because... No, the box is only, the box will run certified, the box will run applications that are certified by Ndrima and applications that are certified by that developer. That's it. So you've got a signer as your developer. Anything you sign, anything you certify will then run on only the boxes that are actually the dev boxes that were sold to you, because those dev boxes are actually built for you. They have, you know, they will only run your games or all games or official games. It's like $200 more or $300 more. That's like $500 or $600, yeah. It's the same hardware. There's nothing different. Right. Well, the whole issue with that is it's support. The reason for the increased price is that those boxes require a little more, quite a bit more support, because mostly, you know, those people are going to say, hey, the signature doesn't work, or, you know, whatever. And also supporting those signatures is quite an endeavor. Yeah. Actually, not a lot. It goes to licensing CSS. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to tell you the exact amount, but it's dollars. It's not that much. But the target price of the box is $299. Yeah? If they survive the court battle, that's going to change a lot. If they survive the court battle, that means that we can do whatever the hell we want with those keys. And, you know, then we won't care anymore. But... you know, I think that would have to happen first, and, you know, and it would have to set the legal precedent for, you know, I think a lot of things would have to happen for us to then basically just give up on protecting all those DVD, you know, property rights. It's part of our job is to make sure that all the DVDs that run on our box, you know, can't get copied. If you want to remaster your own content in a different format and create a playback system on our box, you can do that too. Doesn't have to be an official DVD that you're using to play back something, but, you know, it's our business in supporting that standard that we protect it as well. Go ahead. The $300 price point of the the $300 price point of the box doesn't cover anything. The cost, the bill of materials on that box is above $300. You know, from what I hear, a lot of different stories for what the bill of materials of the PS2 is. I've heard $500, $600. It's selling for $299. You know, the business of video games is that you basically take a huge hit on the box so that everyone will get it, and then you make all your money on, you know, the game licenses and the royalties, right? So basically, it's because you want a platform that is out there so that it will drive getting all those games. Now, we want to do that too because we want to compete. But if we want to compete, we want to basically infiltrate the market with this sort of open source capable system that leverages this sort of open platform and replace the others. We'll never do it if the price of the box is $600-$800, because we won't get enough penetration into the market fast enough to really be anywhere on the market share map. So we do have to kind of play by that game, but on the flip side, we're also making it so that people can release games for free, and only when they want to market their game, will they have to pay a royalty? And the royalty is actually pretty competitive. It's less than the others. Go ahead. Yes, because I'm giving away hardware at a huge loss. Well, it is if you want to get a game out to a million people. You know what I mean? The game model works today. You know, Sony, because they're hardware-centric, they didn't build it on a software base. They just said, we'll build this piece of hardware and we'll give it away, and then you guys pay us per copy. That's like an agreement that they made in the beginning. And the result of that was a lot of boxes got out there and a lot of games were made, and the game companies were willing to pay that cut, but they pay like 20% to the manufacturer of the hardware. Now, we're not only willing to take less, but we're also willing to do a freeware program, and we're willing to say, okay, the architecture we won't own, so we're not actually licensing anything. We're providing a certification program. No, I mean, obviously early adopters, we work out special arrangements with some of the, you know, if they're going to commit to a certain amount of titles and we think that they've got some amazing talent and it's going to be a great game. But basically, it's a few dollars less than what Sony or Microsoft are going to charge them, or Nintendo especially. So it's still attractive, even if they are going to go with a standard certification and they want to make money on it. It's pretty competitive. Yeah? 5 minutes, okay. Basically, let's see if I don't know if there's another slide here. Oh, there is. The partners that are working with Indrema, the Red Hat one that we've already explained, Collabnet's building this really amazing site. The Indrema Developer Network is going to be coming out in October. What it is it's more than just a site where you can download the SDK and you can find out information and get docs and sort of find out what other people are doing. It will also provide an iteration of Collabnet's source exchange, but it's actually going even further than source exchange. What you can do is there's a section of IDN called Game Exchange. You can go to Game Exchange, you can start a project, you can check in your code in and out. Only you have access to that project. So if you want to get started on, say, a freeware game or an open source project that you want to roll into one of the architecture pieces, you can start that project on Game Exchange and work with other developers. You could make a really big game project by teaming up with other developers globally, and you can check your code in and out. You can manage the software development of it all on Game Exchange. But instead of, you know, Indrema managing those software projects, whoever created that project manages it and can manage whoever else works on it as well. So it's a really cool way of providing not just free tools and SDK and libraries, but also providing everything that you need to collaborate and everything you need to manage your code base and to really make a big project. Because we're trying to make it a soup-to-nuts solution for independent gamers and for people who just want to get started. In addition to that, the announcement that I was talking about that will be another strategic partner will actually provide even better tools and like more sort of IDE advanced features and stuff for free that will allow you to leverage our platform and have a really nice sort of mature environment to work in. That's sort of the next generation of the SDK environment that we'll be talking about a little bit in the future. Linux Care is supporting the developers that are going to install sort of a development environment based on the IES platform. Linux Care will provide service level agreements for those companies. NVIDIA, obviously, for the GPU. A company called Mannix Entertainment, who did the special effects for The Matrix, they're working with us and designing the GUI, which is really cool. It's not a Windows-based GUI. This is a TV navigation GUI, and it's going to be so cool. It's going to have all sorts of special effects that you haven't seen on anything else before. On the hardware side, additionally, we use VisionText technology for encoding and a major CPU vendor, which we're not announcing yet. That's been one of those things that everyone keeps asking about, but we're probably not going to announce our CPU vendor until towards the end of the year. we have probably, you know, we're probably not going to change our existing architecture. It's already based on one of those vendors. We're just not announcing it yet. That's it. Yeah, there are a variety of different ones. No, there's not. We're actually working with other, you know, there are a few Linux porting houses, well, Linux developers. Right. Loki's an example of, you know, we don't just view Loki actually as a porting house. They could be a distributor as well. A lot of them have a fantastic capability of getting games onto our platform in a very short development cycle, and we don't have to create sort of a porting assistance division of the company. We can actually enlist a lot of the other Linux developers to help get major titles moved onto our platform quicker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. We're looking at a software upgrade system where if you have a standard box, we could send you basically an application that runs, and that application was designed for you. So you run it on any box, it enables that box. The problem is that then those can get passed around. So, you know, that's kind of a sensitive thing. There's also been, you know, some people in Indrema have been saying, well, why don't we just make the dev box allow it to play anything? It's already $600. You know, we're making money on the box, so why don't we just kind of let it play anything? Because if people want to, they can pay $600 and do whatever the hell they want with it. That's been tossed around quite a bit in the company. But one of the issues with that is that, you know, are we going to make enough on those developer boxes so that if the business model changes and everyone decides to pay $600 to do whatever they want, will we actually make enough on the box to make up for the fact that we're going to have a severely diminished revenue stream on the game side? So, you know, obviously we're spending all this energy to develop this technology, and we want to get into as many people's hands as possible at a low price. So the only way we can make it up is to use the standard game model. But you can do whatever you want by making, you know, you can make whatever you want and certify it for free and have it run on your own box. You can scratch your own itch and make whatever you want for yourself and just submit it for certification to run on your box or get a dev box. Every console has its own key. Well, yeah, every console has a serial number key. So when you download a game onto the box, that using the download pack system, it binds to your serial number. And it only, that copy only runs on your box. So if you tried to copy and run onto the box, it wouldn't run. There's also a really cool feature on the game channel where you can release a game that's already loaded and then give the download code to your friend in, like, Canada. And they could download it and run it because it's been released. So when you release it, it actually sends to the download, to the game channel. It lets the game channel know that it's been released. So it's still... No, not sell. Well, I mean, you could sell, I guess. You just can never activate it, because unless that person releases it again, can you get it back? Can you activate it again? Yeah. It's very cool. Yeah. You could. Yeah, you definitely could do that. Yeah. It's like a virtual trading system. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a game controller. So the box comes with one game controller, and the game controllers are USB-based. It's digital. It's a digital input, and it has a lot of buttons that you're used to on the PC, but it has some extra buttons, and force feedback will be possible, although I think that game controller, I'm not sure if that... We've decided on including force feedback on the game controller because everything costs money. Yes, there will be a wireless keyboard and a TV remote control, and those are sold separately. The wireless keyboard is going to be, you know, like, this isn't a quote, but it'll be around $20 or something like that. It's going to be very cheap. What? A driver wheel? Most definitely. I don't know if we're manufacturing the driver wheel, because we already have companies that are interested in doing it. So you'll see a driver wheel, but it may not be from our brand. Yeah. Very like high definition quality. Well, you have HDTV outputs on the box, so you can do component 1080i output into your HDTV, so that's pretty high resolution. You mean like filtering or motion estimation or what? Yeah. Yeah, well, the answer is yes. The answer is, you know, we definitely, you know, love the video features of the box and want to improve them over time. And, you know, a lot of that can be done in OpenStream as an open source project, and some of that, you know, we can work on too. Yeah. Good question. There is a cross-section of support between the digital joysticks you see today that will run on Linux and then what we... So you might see some, but we're not guaranteeing anything. So you might get away with having another joystick that is your favorite joystick and happens to run on some games. Maybe one game it doesn't because it doesn't have a feature that is, you know, needed. So it is based on that driver, but it's different. Anything else? Great. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate your time.